Welcome to the limited time only
Christmas special.
The special guest later in the episode is
Janice Connolly. This week it's time for a Christmas special.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
I think of myself as a patron of the arts. I buy theatre tickets. Encore! I attend cinematic presentations.
Can I see some ID, madam? This is a 12 certification.
Oh, blast. And I adore a good art exhibition.
Who's this by? It's just blobs.
Picasso?
Oh. But it's only now that I can call myself a true patron, as I've become a patron of Limited Time Only podcast. My support enables Susie and Esther to make LTO the best it can be, and gets me bonus content and experiences I don't want to miss. I've just signed up for the first patron-only LTO live online. To sign up, go to patreon.com and search for Limited Time Only podcast. There's a link in the show notes and in the LTO Instagram bio. I'll see you over there. I'm just off to the opera. Toodaloo!
It's Christmas all over the world.
Do you remember that? In the film with Dudley Moore?
Oh, what, Herbie or something?
No, it was Santa Claus the movie.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I forgot about Santa Claus. Dudley Moore.
And apparently they have done it up. And it's going to be back in the cinema. Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, they're going to reissue it?
Re-release it? Whether it's all, you know, new fandangled. Snazzy. Yeah. How cool
snazzy
is that?
Just covers everything. Well, that's very exciting. I'd forgotten about that film. There are so many Christmas films I've forgotten. But later on, we are going to have a little quiz. So,
okay. Which ones have you forgotten, Susie?
I'm not going to talk about films in any way. There is no help coming here. But I have got, I mean, as you can see, well, you can't see if you're listening to this, but those of you who might watch this later on Facebook, YouTube, whatever it's called, might see that I've got a rather exciting outfit on.
Yes. We've gone different ends of the spectrum.
We have. You've gone classy. I've gone ridiculous.
I've gone full shimmer. I'm like a big Christmas tree.
You're like a bauble.
I'm like a big booby bauble.
Booby, but two baubles, in fact.
Two baubles squashed into.
Dangling there.
Gold. Dangling.
They're not dangling,
that
are
makes
they really?
Me think of testicles.
They're still robust.
Thank you. They're full. Should not grab my boobs on the camera.
Let's move on. And I'm dressed as a Christmas elf.
You are.
Which is, I mean, I should have. What could my Christmas elf name be?
Socky. It looks like a sock.
I know. It's my hat. It isn't a sock. It's Socky.
Socky. God, I'm still a bit phlegmy from my cold. I sound like bloody Madge Bishop.
Phlegmy? I could be phlegmy. I've got a bit of phlegm. I am Phlegmy the Elf.
Phlegmy the Elf. Look what I've caught, Suze. I've gone method. I'm going to have a I think I should have bought some mince pies because we could be in trouble. Something to soak it up.
Well, I've got some Christmas coins. Chocolate coins. I've got a load of them. They're actually my kids, but they're not going to see them again.
No.
I've got some Stollen.
Stollen? I loved a
Stollen. I didn't have any mince pies. It is empty, but I'm showing it anyway. I've got a box of Quality Street.
Yes.
What was that song they used to sing? There was the carol singers that used to go round.
All I've got is Sesame Street going through my head.
Well, you know, they should do a crossover.
Yeah.
Each suite could have a different...
Yes.
The red one could be Elmo.
The purple one could be Big Bird.
Yeah, the blue one could be Cookie Monster.
Yes, that's the coconut. I get those in my house because no one else likes the coconut one apart from me.
Oh, that's when you're winning at life, when you are the only one who likes a particular Quality Street or Rose's chocolate.
Yes.
My husband wins in our house because he's the only one who likes the strawberry creams.
Oh, love a strawberry cream. Don't like an orange cream, strawberry cream all the way.
Particularly with the fruits. I've also got some Fox's Fabulous chocolatey biscuits.
I'm in the wrong house. All I've got is Bristol cream, which is absolutely... So I've got a beautiful blue bottle of Harvey's Bristol. Let me hang on. Listen to this. I'm going to pour it into my schooner glass. Wait. It's like ASMR. Oh, I'm going to get shit face before lunch. I'm just going to have a sip. Here we go. Oh, I'm going to be... It's like 5 to 11.
You're going to be absolutely hammered.
I'm going to walk the dog later. No doubt I'll do a story about that.
Watch out, Nancy. Watch where she takes you.
Oh, it's good. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Well, I've got a cup of tea
with
your face on it. So, you know, it's almost as good. Let's have a sip. There you are. Special radio drinking.
Yes,
there.
Here's my sip. My pinky was out for the...
It was very dainty. She's very dainty. I do want to ask a question, though, because I have also got this, which is a microwavable Christmas pudding from M&S. Christmas pudding, Esther, in your house, yes or no?
No.
Oh.
I can eat one, but no, we're not Christmas pudding people. I have got into Christmas cake in the last few years, but I can't have loads of it. My mum used to make an amazing Christmas cake with like the marzipan, like everybody did in the 80s, with like the snowy banner around the outside.
It still happens.
And then you put the little figures on the top. Oh, and I always just used to get a bit of icing and marzipan, but now I actually like Christmas cake. What about your house? Pudding?
Well, I do like a pudding, but it doesn't always happen. But I might actually make one this year, but I better get a move on because you're meant to make them like 8 weeks before.
And it's the 14th of December, Suze.
So I'm in trouble there. Tell you what, well, I have got 15 of these microwavable ones that I've been collecting. This is best before the 20th of the 1st, 2023. But I reckon it's indestructible.
I think they're like tins. Never go off. You stick them in a time capsule. They'll be fine.
Yeah. So I'm going to eat that.
That'd be edible when our kids are our age. Be fine.
Be fine. Yeah. 40 years. Yeah. Be great. Well, that's good. So I'm fully catered for. I mean, I have got an empty box of Quality Street, but I'll pretend they're there. A bit like in the film Hook, when they imagine the food and it appears.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not really a magic Christmas elf called Flemmy, but maybe just for today I can be.
Yes. I think you'd make a brilliant elf. And I shall just sit here and get quietly shit-faced on the other end of the call.
I'm going to have to go and buy some after this.
So tell me, Suze, what's Christmas like in your household?
Well, we've just... Tell you what we did yesterday is we went to choose our Christmas tree.
Oh!
So we went to this farm where they grow them throughout the year, and you walk round, you have a tag, and you walk round and you pick the one you want and you put your tag around it, and then they deliver it to you on the day of your choice.
That is so cool. Do you feel sorry for the sad one? For like the gnarly one? Because that'd be me. I'd pick the shit one because I'd feel sorry for it.
No, well, there are a lot of like little scrawny ones that don't get picked.
Yes.
But there's also these amazing massive ones, some of which have tags around and you go, oh, someone's getting that.
Oh,
it's
wow.
20 foot tall.
Where the hell? I mean, that's got to be a massive
house. A hotel or something, maybe. Or yeah. Maybe a massive house. Maybe a massive house.
One day,
but
Suze.
We have picked our tree, and yeah, I hope it's all right. I can't. Yeah. It's got a double prong at the top, which is quite exciting. I've gone for a double pronged.
Is that so that both kids can have a star or an angel to put on the top and you keep them both happy?
I can put both children on the top when they're being particularly irritating. Right, up you go. You can sit there for half an hour and think about what you've done.
Look at the wall, don't look at me.
Yeah. Well, the tree's very important to me. I love decorating the tree. That's always probably one of the nicest moments of Christmas. And we have the sherry. Well, I do. The kids don't. We put the Christmas music on. And then I'm very good at not being bothered that the children are in no way symmetrical in their decoration of the tree. We just bung it all on. We've got so many random decorations now. I really like it. And there's ones that have got pictures of the kids on, you know, that they've made at school. That's like a snowman drawing and then the face of my son, which is just so funny. And ones we were given when the kids were born, and we bought one when we went on our honeymoon. So we're kind of gathering baubles, which I think, it's really nice. Eventually it's going to become far too heavy and fall over. But
well, then you're just going to need more trees, or you're going to need to live in a bigger house and have the 20-foot tree.
Do people have more than one, don't they? Some people have more
we
than
do.
One.
We do. We have two trees.
I mean, I'm not surprised with that dress you're wearing.
I go on the tree. I am the bauble. We have two trees. So when I was growing up, my dad and I always used to go to the woods and buy a tree. And we would always get our Christmas tree the Sunday before Christmas. And I loved the smell of the woods. And we'd pick a tree, bring it home. We'd leave it in the garden for 24 hours. I have no idea why. And pick all the bits off it, like random bits of hay or whatever.
To settle.
And then we'd decorate it. But now we have one fake one and one real one. Because I really like a real tree. I'm a real tree kind of girl. But in our lounge, we have a very good fake one that we moved not long after we bought in the sales. It should have been like a ridiculous amount of money for not a fat lot. And we've used that for the last year. So that goes in the lounge. And then in the kitchen, I always get a real one, but it's not as big. It's probably like 5 foot. And that one has quite different decorations that we bought from Amsterdam. And they're all like little, it's more like a Scandi tree. We go for that style there with like real dried oranges on and stuff. Yeah.
You are classy in your house.
Do you
Stanford's.
Think so?
Yeah, I think you are. I mean, I've been in Esther's house and it's very well decorated.
Just the ones. I didn't like it, so just the ones.
Oh my God. It's Christmas. She's doing this to me on Christmas.
I reject
everybody.
It. I'm just trying to be hilarious. Obviously, I love
you're
it.
Not having one
here.
Of my chocolate coins now.
Yeah, you think my house is classy, though?
Oh, very. Oh. Yeah, very. I go around, I get very jealous because mine's just mostly a shambles.
Isn't that interesting? Because I think your house is amazing and I come back from yours and I'm like, oh, I want to change ours.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting what you see in other people's houses?
Happy with what we've got.
Exactly.
This is the moral of this little chat, everybody.
Yes, this is the moral of the chat at Christmas. So what are your traditions? So you have the tree, you let the kids do what they want. My kids were younger, I would adjust it. And actually, now the three of us have a snowball. So my kids have a snowball as well. So, because Ella's 17, James is 14.
Oh, as in a drink, the snowball.
As in a drink.
I was like, what is she talking about?
Yeah, so we have a snowball. It's bloody brilliant. We put the trip. Bublé comes on the 1st of December. We start the day with Bublé. It's Bublé Day, 1st of December. And then, see, the sherry's kicking in. and then we tree goes up, which is earlier than I would normally do it, but 1st of December. And then, we have a snowball.
What is a snowball?
So a snowball is Advocar, Sprite, and a little bit of Angostura bitters, somebody said to shake in the top. It's delicious. It's like an ice cream drink. What are those drinks?
Ice cream sundae? Ice cream soda?
Ice cream sodas with a blob of ice cream in the top. That's what it tastes like. And they're a big hit. And so the kids have one. And of course, Ella can have a full-size one now because she's basically, she could reproduce if she wanted to.
Which might happen after too many snowballs.
Well, not really. She's not of that persuasion. She's more into the ladies.
Sherry. So she doesn't need many snowballs. Well, I think I might start. I might instate the snowball rule. So, yeah, trees are important. Music, obviously, very important for both of us. I prefer the classic kind of carols. I like carols, but I also like...
Oh, me too.
The classic kind of, the Bublés, the Mariah Carey, the Slades of the world.
The Whamageddon.
I'm not so keen on the... Yeah, Whamageddon. I like doing that. That's really fun. The E17s. I don't know. I have started, November is when I kind of start Christmas preparations. And from November, we've been singing Christmas carols and stuff.
Have you?
In our house. Oh, yeah. It was middle of November and I asked Alexa to play Christmas songs and she started off all right. And then it always starts with Mariah Carey.
Yes.
All I Want for Christmas Is You. I know that's going to be the first one every time. And then she played a cover of E17, Stay Another Day. Why do you need to cover that?
I have no idea.
And it was awful. And there's so many cheat. I would like to know how many Christmas songs there are in the world.
Yes.
There must be hundreds of thousands of Christmas songs.
Do you know what? We should make our own.
We should.
We should make our own.
We should do that.
We should have a Christmas wrap in it, and you should wear your elf, like your Flem the Elf should do a wrap in the middle of the song.
Well, we can write Esther. We can write it. We can do it.
We can write it. We'll release our Christmas, and we'll aim for Christmas number one next year.
Yeah, I think it's doable.
Maybe this year's too ambitious.
Well,
I think it's doable.
I'm excited by that.
I'm really excited. Have you ever heard the song Dominic the Donkey?
Are you okay, Esther?
The Christmas song. Because my friends, Abby and Tim, they play it all the time.
Dominic the Donkey?
Is
it something to do with...
Yeah, it goes, dubba dubba, it-aw, it's Dominic the Donkey. Yeah, can't remember.
They've sung it to you, have they? Have you played it? Have you heard it played from a recorded device? They've not just made it up to take the PP.
No, it's a genuine song. I have heard it once or twice since. Susie, I don't think I should be drinking this sherry. I'm 3/4 of the way down it.
Oh my God. Giddy. Well, it is, I mean, it's...
But like giddy as in, I might have another one. Just one more would be all right. I feel really silly.
I'm going to have a chocolate coin.
Yes. Why don't you do a sugar high and I'll just get a little bit squiffy.
Oh, I'm having a chocolate coin. Yeah, I'll go kind of cross-eyed with sugar. You can get pissed.
You can have like an insulin reaction and I'll just have a hangover. Well, no, I'm not having more than two though. But anyway, back to Dominic the Donkey. Yes, every time we used to go to Tim and Abby's a lot at Christmas... And they'd always have it on with your favourite film in the background, Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, we've already watched it. We've watched it about four
have
times
you?
Already. Started that in November as well.
Oh, really? We try and wait till the 1st of December if we can. And actually, the other day, this is going out on the 14th of December, but really, it's November. But the other day, Scrooged was on the telly, and Scrooged is my favourite Christmas film.
Oh.
I love Scrooged.
There are so many good ones.
I love it. I love Bill Murray. I love Muppet Christmas Carol. It's up there for me. I also really like It's a Wonderful Life, but I always struggle to get into it for the first five minutes because it's such a different pace.
Yeah.
But it's such a beautiful film. And after about 10 years, my husband finally watched it last year because he's always been a bit like, yeah, don't fancy it. And then he watched it and he loved it. But Scrooge was on Channel 5 or something last Sunday and we watched it. And I just love that film. I remember going to see it when I was 10 at the cinema with my dad. And that's my number one. Obviously with obligatory Home Alone.
Yeah.
And
I
all
mean,
those.
Christmas film, for me, the reason why I don't always, but I have started a bit early this year. Did start in November, partly because the kids start rehearsing their nativity shows. My daughter's been rehearsing their version of A Christmas Carol since I don't know, the end of October or something. So we've had the Christmas has been in the house. And I always think it's not long enough. You only get like 25 days if you start on the 1st of December. It's not long enough because it's so, I love the music and I love the food and the feeling of it. And I think Christmas, I mean, to be honest, I would be happy if Christmas Day just didn't happen.
Me
I
too.
I don't care about
oh my
Christmas
God.
Day. Yeah, it's the build up. It's the loveliness of the season itself. It's not. And I think I've said this before that actually on Christmas Day, I get quite a feeling of being a bit trapped because suddenly it's like being in lockdown again because you have no contact with the outside world. You are stuck in a house with your family, and there's nobody to play with other than your family. And I love my family, but I do get like okay, there's nobody, I can't see anybody. And this is it now for the day. And also, and then it's over. And I just like the music and stuff. So I just want to start it as early as possible.
I don't blame you, you know. I've got lots of Christmas traditions, but the kids have often said, and we all say it, by lunchtime, it's done.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, and then the holiday adverts start and the sale adverts. And I'm bugger off, it's still Christmas.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I love the build up to Christmas. I love it. And I listen to Carols from Kings and I love carols. And actually, my favourite Christmas song, I think it's my favourite Christmas song. Yeah, I'm fairly certain it is the one that goes, four calling birds, three turtle doves, two da ba da dee da da da. Paul Hollywood.
Have you made up the words? Da 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 da. Yes,
I think
that was on the other day.
Silver bells or something. Da 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 da. I love it. Well, my daughter said the other day she hears Paul Hollywood in it, and now I can hear it, and that's all I can hear.
That's what we should do. We should do a cover of that with our own words.
Okay.
Right, we're going to write it.
That's a great idea.
We're going to write it. Just a short bit, because it goes on.
Don't stay indoors, trapped with my fam. I want to jam
drink
with my mates.
I need a wee. Yes. I mean, I always come back to wee.
We interrupt this programme with a Yule Bash. For those wondering what to buy me for Christmas, may I suggest 5 to 14 days without my children, preferably in a warm climate with unlimited alcohol, or a giant Toblerone. Merry Christmas. Goodbye.
I'll tell you what I've been reading. I mean, I've been reading this since September. I was bought it last year by my lovely mother-in-law, who gets me really good books, actually. And this one is called Calm Christmas by Beth Kempton. I don't know who Beth Kempton is, but she's very nice. And she writes...
Very chill. Very,
she's chill. And she... What she's done is... the point of this book is to work out what version of Christmas and what bits of Christmas and Christmas preparation you love to try and get you back to enjoying Christmas rather than, and I have to admit, to have taken on... I mean, my mum always says she doesn't like Christmas. I don't think it's entirely true because she's really good at it. But I think it is quite stressful. And I do, I've spoken to her about this recently. Right, single mother, three children, full-time job. She, and I was like, how did you wrap all the presents? Because I'm not kidding, we would get the most ridiculous number of presents. And I actually find that really stressful now. That's one thing I find stressful about Christmas. If there's loads of presents and we have to find places to put them. It's kids, really, the kids. And I'm guilty of buying them lots of stuff, but I go, I start hyperventilating a little bit. But she would buy us so many presents, and Santa would always be very generous as well. Obviously took a leaf.
Oh, so you got presents from your mum and from Santa?
And from Santa. I mean, Santa would take a leaf out of my mum's book, I think. And I'd be like, "How? When did you wrap the presents?" And she's like, "I would be up till 3 a.m. on Christmas Day wrapping them." And I was like, and then she would make the dinner, and then she would make the lunch, and then often on Boxing Day we'd either have our, you know, her brother and my cousins over, or we'd go to theirs.
Yeah,
it was a lot, and I think she found it really stressful and tiring. But you know, she did that herself in a way. Sorry, Mum, but I think you've got to set your boundaries, isn't it, when Christmas is concerned, and kind of I love getting presents for people. I love it. But I do get a bit paranoid. I'm like, oh, I haven't spent enough money on them, or it's not big enough. And I just don't think that's not where I should
don't,
be.
No, don't
head.
Worry about stuff like that. I don't think. I just think I start my Christmas shopping really early, actually. Sometimes I'll buy things like, I remember last year, I bought your present in like February or March because I saw it and you were quite into crocheting at the time, and it was a Christmas thing, and I was like, I'm going to get that for Susie now, but she'll have to open it before Christmas so she can crochet it for Christmas.
That's reminding me, I need to get it down from the loft.
I'm sure. And then I thought, actually, will she have time? But it's something you can do at some
definitely.
Point. You know? But if I see gifts, then I try and get them early. I find it difficult because my daughter's birthday is sort of beginning, middle of November. So nothing really kicks off for us until that's happened. So I don't have the kids' Christmas lists and stuff like that. And I love buying presents and I love wrapping presents, but I do get a bit overwhelmed by it.
Yes,
I get overwhelmed by, where is this? Have I got this? And I remember, oh my God, one Christmas Eve, midnight, I checked everything on the Wednesday. We've got two lofts in our house because there was an extension built on before we moved in. So we've got a loft in our bedroom. And I went up that loft on the Wednesday before Christmas, which is about 4 days before, bought the presents down, checked everything. Everything was in ship shape, put it back up. Then went up at midnight on Christmas Eve, or Christmas Day, as you would say, and there were wrappers everywhere because a mouse had gone into the loft and eaten all of the chocolate. Terry's chocolate orange wrappers everywhere, Cadbury's Santa's wraps everywhere. I was panicking that it had got into the main presents because they were all up there as well. But I was in tears at midnight. Oh my God. I had to write a note. on behalf of... I had to get Santa's elf to write a note to explain that a bag had fallen off Santa's sleigh and chocolate would be arriving within the next few days. I was absolutely heartbroken because... And they were fine. And it was a beautiful letter that Santa's elf wrote. But... I was devastated because I want, yes, you just want it to be perfect, don't you? You want them to have a lovely time.
And definitely the chocolate. Yeah, I've been buying stuff already. But one of the things I'm trying not to do is be influenced by Christmas advertising. I am holding fast and I'm like, no, I don't need that stuff. They don't need that stuff. And I've said to the children, you're not getting as much this year because look around you, children. Look how much stuff she's having in the sherry, everybody.
I'm having in the sherry.
So prepare yourselves, guys. We don't know where it's going to go.
I'm about to dance on the desk. Get a bit bawdy. I love you, Steve.
Get a bit bawdy.
I love you.
Is that a Christina Aguilera song? Like a swing my hat.
Get a little bit bawdy, drinking a bit bloody big sherry. Oh. About to get bawdy. I'm about to reel some stuff about my husband.
coming up next, some filthy secrets.
Yes, coming up next. Let's talk about girth.
I've just swung my head around. Let's talk about what? What did you just say? Let's talk about what? I'm going to have to rewind. What did she say?
Stuff I shouldn't say.
Let's talk about girth. I'm sorry, everybody, if you're listening to this. With anybody
I actually
else.
Meant
mirth. Let's talk about mirth.
Because it's Christmas.
Well, I'll tell you something that's not very funny, but sort of is. I just swung my head around to make the bobble of my elf's hat swing round, and I now feel sick.
Oh, no, it's the bloody waltzes
again. I know,
again.
I can do it. I mean, all I have to do is swing my head around a couple of times. My head-banging days are over. I'm going to go back to this book before we get...
Before I drink any more sherry.
Before we start talking about penises. And it's a lovely, lovely book. And having read it through and done my little, you know, the exercises that you meant to do and thinking, I haven't written anything down. I was just thinking it in my head.
Yes.
I realised that the version of Christmas I love are Santa, the magic of Christmas, traditional, the story of Christmas. I love, you know, the story of Jesus. And it just reminds me of being a child and the nativity. And it is a beautiful, I mean, it's a beautiful, amazing story. And the music, and also like the Victorian Christmas, the Christmas Carol, the Dickens Christmas,
I love it.
And the Christmas tree. All that stuff for me is what Christmas is all about. I'm not about like buying loads and loads of stuff, although obviously I will.
I'm exactly the same. I really like Dickens Christmas, you know, without the poverty. I like that kind of thing. And do you know what? Actually, a couple of years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, 2 years ago, at Christmas, we went to go and pick the bird up from the place where we get it, but we hadn't walked Nancy.
Is that your mother-in-law?
No. No, she comes to us, we do it. I love it. Because we wake up and we have a Bucks Fizz and she stays with us now. So Ian goes and gets her, brings her back over, and then we just hit the Bucks Fizz and just like, you just drink all day, don't you, on Christmas Day. I don't ever really get drunk because I'm eating so much food.
No, I know
it's
what
just,
you mean.
You just push through and... Anyway, a couple of years ago, we went to go and pick the bird up. And it was probably only about 4 o'clock, but it was pitch black, but we hadn't walked Nancy. So Ian went in, and we knew there'd probably be a long queue. So Ian went into this place to get the bird, which it's like a farm shop called Hodge Hill where he was queuing. And I said, well, James and I will start walking down the dual carriageway so she gets a walk and you can just pick us up. Well, we crossed over and there are no streetlights and we couldn't see a bloody thing. And across the fields, fog was rolling in. It was so Dickensian. But then we had to get my phone out because we couldn't put a torch on because we couldn't see our feet in front of ourselves and kept feeling like we were going to trip over. But it felt like we were in some kind of Dickens novel or some kind of gothic horror. It was brilliant, but also deeply terrifying. And and I remember it so well. And so it was only 2 years ago, but James seemed a lot smaller then because he's way taller than me now. But... And for my kids, they're very, like, let's get cozy. I'm seeing you next week, which I can't wait for, and the girls. And then I always go away with my girlfriends and our friend Andy, we always have a weekend away and we see family. And yeah, it's, I love presents and I love wrapping presents, but it's not, yeah, it's not really about that. It's just the magic. It's the carols, it's the food, it's the, yeah, it's the snuggling and watching a Christmas film. And we always do the same thing on Christmas Eve. We now meet with friends, but we always watch The Snowman and the Snow Dog. Yes. About half past, we watch The Snowman and then The Snowman and the Snow Dog about 5 or 6, have our tea and just, and we still put everything out, and in the morning we still have the lovely same tradition, which is the kids and I sit on the stairs, Ian goes down, puts the tree lights on, puts Buble on, and then oh God, you can tell I've had a share, I'm gonna stop crying.
Oh, Esther.
And we'll call up lovely the stairs, he's been, and it's so lovely, isn't it? Oh God.
Oh yes,
drinking was a no, mistake.
No, it's nice. Well, yeah, we'll have the stockings on the bed. Hope, I mean, actually, the kids haven't started waking ridiculously early yet on Christmas Day.
Oh God, that's weird. Mine were at that for me early. They don't do it now, but they.
Well, I don't know. It might happen this year, but I do remember when I went to Australia for a year after I finished university, and obviously it's not cold.
No.
At Christmas, it was really warm. And I was feeling very odd about this. And it was, I felt so homesick. It was the most homesick I felt the entire year that I was there. So I bought a copy of A Christmas Carol.
Oh.
And some candles. And I would... And I would read it aloud to my friend, Becky, who we were sharing. We shared a bed for months in this house in Sydney.
Like Morecambe and Wise.
And we sat there and pretended it was, it was dark, cold London in 1860 or whatever. And and pretended because that was the best way for me to transport myself to the misery of a British winter.
Yeah, a cold British. But it's the lights and the lights are everywhere and it's so joyful, isn't it? And actually, Ella and I went for a walk on Sunday and somebody got lights all in their tree and we just got in the garden, in their back garden, this huge tree. We just got really excited and I love, I mean, I've got fairy lights up in my kitchen because a fairy light is for life, not just for Christmas. And
absolutely,
they're up in my...
Well, you know, we've got some stars. We've got Christmas stars in our hallway that are there all year round.
You have, and they're gorgeous. Yes, they're never nice. Take them down. No. Why would you? I love
lights. It is nice that it's the magic of the magical things like the lights, the pretty things and the lovely music, that can still thrill even, well, forever. And I think that's what's so lovely about it, because it is dark and cold.
and also it's the fact that it's a global thing. So, you know, most people are involved in it, or certainly within the country, most people are celebrating it. So it's not like your birthday, which is lovely. I love a birthday. But like literally everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think even if, I mean, obviously the Christmas story itself and the celebration of the birth of Christ is not something that is top of everyone's list of what, you know, why they're celebrating Christmas. That doesn't matter because it's the collective joy and
love,
magic of it, and love, yeah.
It's about love, isn't it? It's about, and that's why it can get a bit hectic in the run up to Christmas because you're trying to fit everybody in. But oh God, I'm gonna cry again. Oh, but gosh, it's all people you love, isn't it?
Hammered. Yeah, just absolutely pissed everybody.
And like, I've smoked 40 Benny and Hennies.
Yes, it's the happiness and joy of Christmas.
I don't smoke. I did when I was younger, but I don't smoke.
No, she doesn't smoke. It's all cold.
No. Although I did have a vape at a party last year with one of our friends. Remember, it was fun.
Oh, I do like a vape. I like a vape. That goes straight to my head.
Yeah, it did me. I thought it was brilliant. And it was watermelon. And I spent the whole evening singing, watermelon vape. Ha.
She is high on sherry.
Yes, I am high on sherry.
And I'm going to have an apple stollen. And I've had two large chocolate coins. I might just go for another one. But I think... I think you probably.
See, I don't really drink a fat lot anymore, so this has definitely gone to my head. Suze, tell me what your favourite Christmas song is.
Oh my goodness, that's really hard because I just love carols And I love so many songs because I sing a lot of carols with my choir, although I'm not doing it this year, but I am missing it actually. Well, we in our house, we sing now in three parts, me, Beatrice and Joel.
Three-part You're harmony. So ace.
Oh, it's so funny. Gaudete. Do you know Gaudete? Gaudete, Gaudete, Christus est natus, ex Maria Virgine, Gaudete. And it's, there's a really
you
good...
guys are so cute.
It's so ridiculous. It's a beautiful song. It's medieval. And I don't know the rest of the words, but it's covered a lot but folk musicians. And there's a great version by Steel I Span, if anyone wants to listen to that. But yeah, we've learned. Joel sings the bass. I sing the alto part, I suppose, the tune. And Beatrice does the high part. And then even Henry's learning it now. Yeah, so I do love that because it really just makes... because we could all sing it together. But I love, you know, Ding Dong Merrily on High. Yes. I love God Rest You Merry Gentlemen.
Yes.
I love... and then there's some lovely, beautiful hymns like The Shepherd's Farewell by Berlioz, which check out, everybody.
Oh, that's, my God, you're so piece. Knowledgeable on this stuff.
No, not really.
And a little bit geeky, but I love it. I'm there for
it. I love
it.
Handel's Messiah. You can't beat Handel's Messiah at Christmas. Banging. And what else? Ooh, and I love Mariah Carey. All I Want for Christmas Is You. I love Slade. And what's the Wizard? Those classics. And I also love one I really like, and it always I find very, very moving, is Chris de Burgh. Spaceman Came Travelling. Is that what it is?
I don't know if I can remember that.
I remember it. You will know it. La 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 la.
Oh yes. Ah la 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 la. Yes, banger.
A baby's cry, and it went
la 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 la.
That one.
Love it.
And I've just had a memory
beautiful.
Now of, this is quite a funny memory from my school of, you know, the song, When a Child is Born.
Yes.
And it was Johnny Mathis. And we sang it at school, but there was a kind of break, a bridge in the middle where the entire school played the tune on paper and comb. I mean, that sounds like I'm making it up, but I genuinely am not. And at the time I thought, this is a bit weird. But, you know, you just go along with it.
Even at that age, you were like, this is
Yeah, old. And since then I've gone, that was really weird, but cute.
Do you know what? I remember when my kids were in, they were both at primary. Both of them had to do this. They had to either learn the cornet or something else. Anyway, basically everyone learned the cornet. And as parents, we had to go in and watch. And the shock of 68-year-olds all blasting into their cornet slightly out of tune. I was with some friends, Helen, Amy and Alison. We were in bits. We were physically shaking and the deputy head, Mrs. Shecker, kept looking at us and my shoulders were going. I had to, and because I was crying with laughter, I just had to pretend I was really emotional about what was happening because the sheer force of, 60 kids,
that's just
out of tune.
Oh,
hilarious.
My goodness.
So the idea of the paper cones.
Yeah.
Is bloody genius. It's like something from a sitcom.
I know. I don't know anybody else who did that as a child. And I
no,
we never
I would
did it
say
again.
That was a,
just the once.
Maybe a dark time for the teacher who was in charge of that.
Better than trying to get us all to play the recorder, I think. It was a wise choice.
Yeah, actually, maybe they were some kind of genius.
I think they were. You know, look, we do have to get ready for Christmas. And I think if we talk anymore,
we do.
We're not going to... We're going to run out of time.
That's true. I'm going to have my third
cherry. So have a third cherry. I'm going to have my sixth chocolate coin. And
oh, yes.
And we're going to have a brilliant Christmas because it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Christmas.
And get ready, everybody.
Light the lamp, not the rat.
Hurrah. Christmas hit single coming your way.
Yes.
In 2024.
Have a wonderful Christmas. Whatever you do with your family and friends. And yeah, just hope you have a lovely, lovely time.
Happy Christmas!
Happy Christmas!
Ding dong merrily on high, in heaven the bells are ringing.
And we'll see more uninspiring auction houses at the same time tomorrow, when Gaffs Under the Gavel returns. Unfortunately. But now, prepare to declutter with Barbara and Pamela in a festive edition of Sparks Joy. Hello and welcome to Sparks Joy with me, Barbara Sparks.
And me, Pamela Clagsworth.
Joy, Pamela Joy. We've got great expectations for this special Dickensian Christmas edition. We'll be working our magic like David Copperfield and sorting out a bleak house as usual, but with a festive twist.
A festive Oliver twist, if you will.
I won't, Pamela. I do the literary puns around here.
Hard times.
What?
Nothing.
We present our own version of A Christmas Carol. But as neither of us are called Carol, we've changed the title slightly to incorporate our names. So, this episode is called A Christmas Barbara.
Barbara was dead to begin with.
What was that, Pam?
Wishful thinking.
You really must speak up, Pamela. Now, let's take a flutter on a declutter as we travel through time to Christmas Eve in Victorian London. Oh, Esther, I haven't got any ideas for this week's show. I feel completely uninspired.
Mm, sure.
Esther, what are you stuffing into your mouth?
A bit of Lady Macbeth for inspiration.
You're eating the works of Shakespeare?
No, I'm eating a delicious bar of Lady Macbeth dark orange chocolate from Sweet Theatre. I've just finished off Alice in Wonderland. Even the artwork on the packaging is beautiful.
Mm, is it helping?
Indeed it is. Here, have a little nibble on Oscar Wilde.
Mmm.
That one's gin and tonic flavour.
Yum. Have you got any more?
Esther,
have you eaten all the Sweet Theatre chocolate?
Should I exit stage left?
Yeah, I think you should.
Sweet Theatre. Chocolate with drama. Available online at sweettheatre.com and in participating theatres. If Esther hasn't eaten it all.
The first ghost when the bell tolls one.
This is the dwelling, Barbara.
Oh, it's terribly dark, Pamela.
It's 1843, Barbara. They haven't invented motion sensor candles yet.
I'll knock.
That's not very Dickensian, Barbara.
Well, how does one knock Dickensianly?
With more gravitas, Barbara. With a sense of the paradox of the crushing iniquity of society and the ultimate equaliser. One's own doom.
Merry Christmas. Finally.
Yes?
Oh, hello. It's us.
Oh, yes.
Are you going to let us in?
We are otherwise engaged tonight with matters of great import.
Beg pardon?
We're busy.
But it's for a telly show, love. I'm a very important celebrity.
Oh, have I seen you on Don't You Know Who I Think I Am? Get me out of here.
Yes, well, I didn't expect to be voted off by Anthony and Declan. Let us in.
No!
Might we be permitted to cross the threshold on this frosty night and enjoy the warmth of your company?
What's happened to you, Pamela?
Certainly, young lady.
Young?
I suppose thou mayest enter too, old maid.
No, oh, think of the money, Barbara.
Yeah, that's what Ebenezer said. And that's why I'm here. Ooh!
Esther.
Yes, Susan.
We haven't done one of these for a while.
I'm really excited.
I'm excited because we're doing a quiz.
Yeah!
This is the inaugural round of All I Want for Christmas is 10 points on the quiz.
I bloody do. I'm quite competitive, actually. So, yes.
So, there are 10 questions. This quiz is based around Christmas film quotes.
Okay.
Which I think you're going to smash, actually. So I've got 10 quotes from 10 different Christmas movies, and you have to tell me which movie it is from. For extra points, mind you, I don't know all the answers for this, but for extra points, you can tell me which character says said line.
Oh my God.
Or a fact about the film, perhaps, something like that.
Right.
So.
I'm on it.
Are you ready?
Yes, I've opened my filing cabinets in my brain and I'm ready to go.
I think you're just going to get this absolutely no problem. So. All right, let's go with this one first. When a bell rings, an angel gets its wings.
It's a Wonderful Life.
She got it straight up.
And it was made in 1946, which is the year that my dad was born.
Oh.
Do I get an extra point?
James Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart. And that's, yeah. Yeah.
Lovely. Well done. You can get an extra point. So I'm going to give you 2 points for that.
Thank you.
I mean, I've said that the quiz is called All I Want for Christmas is 10 points on the quiz, but you might get that without even getting them all right.
I really hope so.
The next one. This one's really easy. I'll tell you what, I'll do the harder one first and then we'll see.
Okay.
I will honour Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year.
Right, use your brain. I will not honour Christmas in my heart. Oh, well, is it Scrooge?
It is Scrooge. Carol? Yes, because the next quote was going to be, light the lamp, not the rat, light the lamp, not the rat.
Love it. Muppet Christmas Carol, yeah. Michael Caine. And my interesting fact about this is that you worked with Scrooge's nephew, Stephen, his name escapes me.
McIntosh,
yes.
I did, and I told him I loved A Christmas Carol. Yes. And, yeah. But I could have done multiple quotes from that film. I also love the one where when Kermit says, "Please, sir, the rats would like another log for the fire. They're feeling quite cold." And then Scrooge goes, "How would they like to be unemployed?" And then they go, "Bala, heatwave! This is my island in the sun." Which makes me laugh.
I know that bit. Yeah, such a good film.
So you can have 2 points for that. okay,
way.
Maybe Christmas doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.
Ooh, is it something like the Grinch?
There's a clue in the... Yeah, go on. Because of what?
Come from a store. It's sort of rhymey, isn't it? And that makes me think of the Grinch who stole Christmas.
Yes, it's correct. Right? You're correct. Yes, yeah, Dr. Zeus.
All over it.
Yeah.
Yes, Dr. Zeus, that's it. I mean, I'm three sherries in and I'm quite proud of myself for working that. It's not a film I watch that often, that one.
No, I don't even know if I've ever seen it, actually. But I know Dr. Zeus's stuff.
It's not one I automatically go to, but it's very good.
Well done. Next one. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Now, I know a lot of people say this isn't a Christmas film, but it absolutely it is
it's
to
a
me.
Christmas film.
Die Hard.
Yes.
Yes. Bruce Willis. Love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that film.
Oh, you're just going to get them all. Okay, here's one.
I do hope so.
In some ways, you're far superior to my Cocker Spaniel.
I don't know if I'm going to get this one. In some ways, you're far superior to my Cocker Spaniel. I'm trying to think of a film with a Cocker Spaniel.
I'm going to give you a clue.
Well, I kind of want to go Richard Curtis.
Earlier.
In some ways, you're far superior to Much
earlier.
Oh, like a black and white or not that early?
I think, yes, that era. Shall I give you a clue?
Yeah.
I'm dreaming.
White Christmas.
Yes. I mean, that was a very big clue.
Yeah, thank you.
That is a lovely film.
I've only seen a little bit of that. I've never seen it all the way through.
You'd like that.
I will make sure I watch that this year.
Very evocative. Okay, next. Well, what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
You see, the sherries have clouded my thought process.
You definitely would know this film. Think about that, what I've just said. What if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
Oh God, you see, all I can think of is Groundhog Day.
Yes! Which is a Christmas film, right?
I don't know. I guess I wouldn't think of it as a Christmas film. I just think of it as snow. But, okay.
It's
a Christmas film.
Yay! Yeah. I mean, I think of it, I don't know. Yeah, snow, Christmas.
I think it's set in February.
Oh.
But I'm glad I got it. I don't care. It's a Christmas film.
Added bonus.
Brilliant.
Yes. Okay, this one. You can be too old for a lot of things, but you're never too old to be afraid.
You know this. Oh my God, I wish I'd not had three sherries. You're too old.
I mean, it's okay. There is no prize.
No, but it's not Susie.
I know, it's self-respect.
It's because I know it somewhere in the back of my mind. You can be too old for a lot of things, but you're never too old to be afraid. I know this. Give me a clue.
Okay, a clue is, bless the highly nutritious microwave macaroni and cheese dinner and the people who sold it on sale.
Yeah, Home Alone. Oh, God, we watched that. That's one of our firm favourites.
The kids watched that for the first time last year and became obsessed with it.
Oh, it's so, so good.
Kevin!
And the Tom and Jerry of Marvin Harry.
Oh, so good.
Which I remember my nephews really, like, laughing to the point of being in pain. And actually, my kids and Ian will laugh like that. I don't, that doesn't make me laugh. I just think it's great.
Yeah.
But they really will sort of laugh to their doubled over about it. Yeah, that kind of slapstick humour.
Right, there's three more. Oh, Christmas isn't just a day. It's a frame of mind.
I mean, I felt like you went a bit Keanu Reeves then.
It wasn't intentional. I can't imagine him playing this role. But maybe that should be my new impression.
Yeah, I Keanu. Think so. I think, particularly as a voice actor, I think...
I can, new... stand in if anyone needs me.
You can Keanu needs it
Keanu,
up.
Can't afford him.
Yeah, then so you could do cameos as him. Right, tell me it again.
Oh, Christmas isn't just a day. It's a frame of mind.
A Miracle on 34th Street.
Yes, yes.
Yay!
How did you get
I don't know where that?
That
came from.
That's amazing.
Recesses.
So that's Recesses Chris, of Chris my mind. Kringle says that. And he says, and that's what's changing. And maybe, and that's what I'm here to try and do something about. Something.
Oh, lovely Richard Attenborough. That's the one I know.
Yes, I've watched that one. I would like to watch the original, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, two more.
Right.
There was more than one lobster at the birth of Jesus.
Love Actually.
Yes. I knew you'd get that one because
my tone
you dropped. Mentioned...
I want to love Actually. Don't love it.
No, I know.
I want to love it.
You hate Actually.
I really want to love it.
But I love Emma Thompson in Love Actually, and that's her line, one of her lines.
Yes, it is her line. Yes, she's glorious in it. I mean, they're all glorious in it. There's just a lot of exposition, which annoys me.
It
is a joyful film.
Sorry, Richard. Right.
Love. I mean, Richard Curtis, I love you. Everything
I
else
know
you do.
I listens to
you're
this,
a work
so,
of art. Yeah. You're a work of art? You know, too many sherries.
Too many sherries. Okay, then the last one is, I planned out our whole day. First we make snow angels for 2 hours, then we go ice skating, and then we'll eat a whole roll of cookie dough as fast as we can, and then to finish, we'll snuggle.
Elf. I love Elf, yes. And I love Will Ferrell.
Yes.
Love him. Yeah, such a good film.
Gosh, you're pretty impressive, Esther.
Thanks, babe.
I mean, they were like the top quotes from those films, as Googled by me.
It sounds like you're negating my
points. No, not at all. I'd just be interested to know how many other people got those as well. I don't think I would have done anywhere near as well.
I think I'm, you know, pretty gifted. Apart from the bit of help on White Christmas, I think...
you did get all the others.
It's just something that I excel at. I'm just good at movie quotes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not very good at maths.
Not important.
Although I can do algebra. But you know, I'm good at multiplication and algebra, but everything else, no. But movie quotes, that's my thing, and that's going on my curriculum vitae.
To get somewhere in life, you need to know your movie quotes, especially Christmas ones.
Yes.
So, Esther, all I want for Christmas is 10 points on this quiz, and you got them. And in fact, you've got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, you got 12.
Can I give you more quote? Can I give you more information? Bing Crosby and I share the same birthday.
How am I not surprised that you know when Bing Crosby's birthday is? I mean, that's amazing. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Bing.
I know.
I love the little drummer boy that he sings with them.
David
Bowie.
But have you ever watched? I don't think Bing Crosby liked David Bowie. I remember seeing the opening to that, and he just looks a little bit sort of like young man, sort of a bit arsy.
It's probably a bit like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
I just want to go and have a cup of tea.
Yes.
And sit down. Don't,
and maybe
don't
he did like
out.
Him, but I just got some vibes from him.
Yeah, it's a bit of it's a strange one. Okay, so Bing Crosby shares your birthday. Any more interesting facts? That's 13 points.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay. No, this is going to be quite boring for people. Let's just finish on Bing.
Let's stick with 13. Lucky for some, lucky for Esther, and lucky for us all to have such a movie quote genius on the programme today. Thank you, Esther Bauble Stanford.
Thank you very much. It's a gift. It's a God-given gift. I'd like to thank my friends and my family and my brain.
There's nothing in here. What are we meant to declutter?
Well, the master of the house is frugal to a fault. You'll find no clutter here and no warmth besides.
What's that pile of old rags in the corner? I'll chuck that.
Well, that's Ebenezer Scrooge. He cowers in fear.
Because thou art a ghost?
A ghost?
He's not afraid of me. He fears her.
Me? But I'm the star here. I'm a celebrity declutterer. The creme de la creme. I'm here to help. Help!
I am the ghost of Christmas past. A declutter of souls, if you will.
I won't.
Well, I'll pop them into this handy bag for lives and take them down the tip for recycling.
Environmentally conscious haunting. Most agreeable.
I need to get a wriggle on. I've only got an hour before the ghost of Christmas present arrives.
Ah! What's happening?
I'm taking a flutter on a declutter.
What are you decluttering?
You, Barbara.
But what's going to happen to all my gubbins? I want to take it with me.
I'll put it into storage, Barbara.
Thank you, Pamela. It's all very important, especially my collection of hotel mini soaps. Ah! Remember me on Wikipedia!
She's gone. Will that really put all the detritus in storage?
Nah. I've already burnt most of it.
I think this calls for a celebration.
Would you care for a spirit, Spirit?
Oh, yes, please. I'm a pina colada ghoul.
Then you can get on with repairing Mr. Scrooge's damaged soul.
Oh, no, I can't be bothered. I've spent 180 years trying to sort that man out and he's still useless. Come on, let's party like it's 1899.
God bless us, everyone. Even you, Barbara.
And don't forget to save my signed poster of Terry Wogan!
Time, you know you're gonna be mine. You know you're gonna be mine. I'm gonna get you, baby.
I'm gonna get you, yes I am.
I'm gonna get you, baby.
I'm gonna get you, yes I am.
The singing's good.
Can you hear us?
Oh, she got some tinsel. Got a couple of baubles here.
Got this sprout headdress.
Oh, lovely.
Today's guest is award-winning actor, writer, comedian, director and artistic director, Janice Connolly. As her comedy alter ego, Barbara Nice, Janice has been described as a cross between Victoria Wood and Mrs. Merton. From having her own show on Radio 2, to starring in Phoenix Nights and being in punk rock bands, championed by John Peel nonetheless, Janice has literally done it all. And in 2017, Janice was awarded the British Empire Medal for services to community arts. We talked to Janice about her life and career to date, working with Peter Kay and Joe Lycett, being a semi-finalist on Britain's Got Talent, and the difference she has made to so many lives through her work with women in theatre. Welcome to the show, Janice Connolly.
So this is our Christmas special episode, which is very exciting. And Janice is wearing a lovely tinsel corsage.
Corsage.
Tinsely sprout corsage.
Sprouts.
Sprouts.
Is it? Oh, he has got sprouts on. Oh, that's bloody brilliant.
It's actually not too itchy, so I'm very pleased.
Oh, well.
That's good.
That's always good. The baseline for any clothing, I feel.
Is it itching?
Is it itching?
Yeah, is it itching?
But my daughter once said, everyone gets a little bit scared and everyone's a little bit itchy.
Right. You might need to write a song about that. I think it's that. We're all a little bit scared. We're all a little bit itchy.
It's a Christmas classic already.
It is. I was looking earlier, actually, about your music and I was listening to Jeremy Thorpe, It's Innocent. Oh, right. We Know Who Did It. Oh, my God. I bloody love that song. It kicked in and I was like, this is great.
Oh, where did you find that?
Well, I was doing my research about you and then I just found it online and I was listening to it. I really liked it.
Yeah, it was very good.
It was really good. But we'll come to your music in a minute. Tell us a bit about how you started out.
Well, I think we all start out very young, don't we? And I remember going for an audition. It was with Kathy Burkhutch, and she'd seen me do something. She got me to go in for an audition at the Almeida Theatre. And I sort of started talking about having been in Herod at Sunday school. And I don't think she really was expecting me to, but she was fine with it. I think the director was a bit, well, this wasn't mad. So I think probably just being in stuff at Sunday school was the beginning of it. from a very young age, you sort of know you want to do it, yeah. don't you, really?
Yeah. Do you think, I think this time of year, actually, I was like, I wonder how many performing arts careers will be kick-started this time of year. You know, when you're seven, because it's, same for me, I was seven playing a wise man.
That's right. And you kind of feel it, don't you? You can get this feeling about it. And you just go, oh, right, I really like doing this. I'm next year, I don't want to be the wise man, I want to be the angel. Or you want to, you've always got your eye on the better part, although Herod, of course, is a very good part because the devil always has the best tunes. So, yeah, it was great playing Herod.
Yeah, I remember for me, it was Little and Large at the Wolverhampton Grand and being asked on stage at about six or seven, looking out at the audience and thinking, oh, this is me. And that was it from that moment forward. So you started off acting at Sunday school and then you went to train to be a drama teacher.
Yeah, I've done lots of youth theatre and stuff like that. And then I left Stockport, where I'm from, and I've done loads of stuff at Stockport Garrick. And I think youth theatres are so important, again, like, you know, Christmas plays, youth theatre. These are all the training grounds, aren't they? You don't go to drama school and that's the first time you've done anything. So I went to Birmingham, but I was trained to be a teacher. And it got a very good reputation for doing drama. So I decided to go there and then stayed ever since, actually. I love Birmingham.
And did you decide that you wanted to be a teacher, or is it that you wanted to be an actor, but you didn't think that that was feasible?
I think probably the second. I thought it was a sensible thing to do. And I didn't know anybody that was an actor. And I don't think I really knew about drama school or anything like that. I just thought I'd just keep on doing drama, and that seemed a way to do it. Yeah, I think this thing about, you know, class and access to the performing arts is a really serious issue, actually. You know, the lad who played Harry Potter, wasn't his mum or his dad a casting agent or something like that? So it's quite a closed shop, isn't it? And I think it's opened up for a bit, and then I think it's closing again. So, yeah, I didn't think I could do that. Didn't know much about it. But I thought, you know, I could go and train as a drama teacher. But always in the back of my mind, I really wanted to do the acting thing. So when I was teaching, I was doing pub theatre, of which there was a lot in Birmingham at the time, every night. And then eventually we decided to try women in theatre out. So I left teaching, went to Bernardo's for a bit, which I thought would be a stopgap, but I was there for 8 years. I always do everything for a very long time. I was a paper girl until I was about 14. So, I sort of do things for a long time. So I worked for Bernardo's. Then we decided we'd have a go at women in theatre, and that was 40 years ago this year. So I've been doing that for a very long time too, as well as doing other things on the
just side. So much, Janice. You've done you do so much, and I've worked with you with women in theatre in different capacities, and I was always just in awe of how much you were doing, but also how you're able to you're across everything and never in a panic.
Well, I was panicking trying to get all this stuff set up.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. You know, you remember when Zoom first came out in the pandemic, I did lots of podcasts like you're doing now. And the number of people going, hang on a minute, I can't find this lead, I can't find these headphones. You're sort of fighting with wires.
Oh, well, you should have seen us before we came on. I mean, we've been doing this for 3 years, kind of just, you know, on and off. We were doing stuff earlier. And even then I was like, I can't hear you, Esther. And I was trying to get her to sort out her stuff. And then I worked out it was actually my fault. I mean, I don't understand. Technology just doesn't ever get any simpler.
No, it doesn't. And that is a panic. But actually, in terms of being with people and coming up with ideas, that doesn't panic me. It's all the technology of it all sort of panics me. But the actual real work of the art of it, no, it doesn't panic me.
The being with people thing. And I think when I've worked with you, and obviously I know what women in theatre do, and you've worked with everybody. And by everybody, I don't mean all the famous people, although you have worked with lots of famous people. I mean every type of person in society, every age group, every social background. And you, I would say, are completely at ease with everybody, and you make everybody feel at ease.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that, because I do think we are all essentially the same. And one of the things that I do try to do, and I think that sort of leads to a lack of panic, is just treat everybody on the level. And then you don't have to start thinking about, oh, is this, have I got to change my ways for this person? I think as long as you're respectful and you listen to people, then you can talk to anybody, actually. I think it's really important that we do that. It's when we get out of these ghettos that we're all in. More and more, we're in these kind of, do you agree with me? If you don't agree with me, then you must hate me. And that's nonsense, that is. We need to be able to talk to everybody.
Yeah, very much so. It's nuanced. Everything's nuanced. And it all feels a bit too black and white sometimes with social media and everything. And it's you know, people aren't one thing or another. Everybody's a bit grey. And, you know, that's just the way it is.
And we can change our views if we talk to people about
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. You can't speak. I hate the idea of anybody feeling that they can't speak. I think that's really sad.
So what was the motivator to set up Women in Theatre?
Well, I was a founder member with three other women. I think the idea was that we wanted to do something. Because in those days, I know things are pretty bad still in terms of female leadership in theatre and stuff, but it was even worse than in the 80s. And I think we were very interested to see what kind of theatre we would make, devising, choosing the subject matter, directing it, working out where we wanted to take it, what we would do without sort of men involved. Nothing against men, I really like men and we work with men and stuff. But we're very interested to see what would be the difference. And I think there was a difference. I think we were able to be more confident. Our ideas were the first ones to be heard. And it was that, really. What kind of theatre could we make as women together?
And you'd have autonomy then as well, wouldn't you, over your projects without having to run it through anybody else?
Yeah, and it's sort of grown from that. And as Susie says, we've worked with so many different groups of people, and it's been an absolute privilege to do that. And I really feel like I know a little bit about lots of things. It's been an incredible education.
Are there any that really stick out as being particularly, I don't know, special or life-changing?
I think that they're all equally important, actually. And one leads to another. I think every one, you get a bit better at something, and then that means the next one even better. But I suppose what I think generally is, I'm very grateful to the people that, because we do so much research, and the people that we've talked to over the years. I'm particularly interested in working with looked after young people, care experienced young people. So I think that's been an ongoing, growing interest. But I think they're all equally important, every project.
When you did your projects, when you've done your plays, how have you chosen the topic?
Some of them are because people are wanting to do something about something. So, for example, we did a project about self-harm. There was a concern that there's a lot of young women, and this was in the Dudley area, but of course it's everywhere. And so that had come from health workers, really brilliant health workers, who recognise that by doing theatre, using arts, you can sort of really get to the middle of a subject and open up something that's taboo or hard to talk about in a safe way. So some were given to us, and then now and then we would choose something. And the sort of Jackie and Heidi, the bad one that Susie was in, I wanted to write that. I was very interested in this concept of what makes a good girl and what makes a bad girl.
It was great.
So some of them came up. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I loved it.
They wailed for it. They just loved it. And it's quite frightening and jumping out the skin, because it was a sort of girl kept in a box up in the attic and you don't know she's there, and then she suddenly jumps out and everybody's screaming and everything. Because he wants to make a piece of theatre that would frighten people a bit, actually, make thrilling piece of live theatre.
Well, I remember in Birmingham when it was on at the door, it was a group of school children came, adolescents, and I remember they were so vocal and it was so exciting and brilliant. They probably hadn't.
But were they screaming?
Well, they were screaming, but they were also shouting.
Go in the box, yeah.
And telling the character, like, don't do, no, don't talk to him. He's not, you know, he's not right or whatever. Yeah. And it was like, this is great. This is what we want, because they are fully engaged. We know they are totally engaged in this story and they're loving it.
Yeah, it was wonderful, that vocal feeling.
I'll never forget that performance, actually. Yeah.
It was terrific, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about the Surprises and the Ever-Readies, which were bands that you were involved in?
They were bands that I was involved in. So that was in the sort of late 70s, early 80s, and I was teaching at the time. And I'd been in a women's band called Strumpet.
Brilliant.
And then I was... The men that were in the Ever-Readies and the Surprises were friends of mine from pub theatre. Yes, it comes through pub theatre, actually. Sometimes you forget how these connections have been made. And they wanted to form a band. So at the beginning, there were three of us, and it was sort of like close harmonies, which is hilarious because I'm good with a tambourine, but I can't really do close harmony.
You were the original Bez.
I was. Bez copied me.
Bez stole your act.
I was very Bez, yeah. So we started off like that, and then we got a drummer and a bass player and stuff like that. And there was a lot and lots of bands going around at the time. We used to play at the Fighting Cocks in Moseley upstairs, a fantastic room that was a dip-up theatre. And we ran at the same time as The Beat.
Oh, wow.
I know. And who's the reggae band? Who's a really famous? UB40.
Oh, UB40. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they looked up to us. They used to support us, UB40. We just never got the breaks, kid. We never got the breaks.
Well, that's because you were supposed to do other things.
Possibly. Also, no business sense.
I did listen to Jeremy Thorpe is Innocent, We Know Who Did It earlier, and I thought, I'm just going to listen to this track, I don't know it. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's so good. And it started, I was like, yeah, I love this.
It's really great, isn't it?
It's really good. Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. I saw that it was sort of punky, but I wasn't sure. I absolutely loved it. Do you miss being in a band?
Well, I do a lot of singing as Barbara, so I've kind of used what I like. Brought that in anyway. Yeah, I made Barbara in this sort of shape of everything I want to do on stage, really. And that's the beauty of having your own act, your sort of solo career. You can just go, I fancy being in a musical, and you can be in one, or fancy dancing on stage, and you can do that.
When did Barbara first appear?
Well, I had been doing the theatre for quite a while, and we devised everything, and I was noticing that the bits that I was writing were funny, and that I had an ability to know how to construct gags and enjoyed doing it. And I think when you're working very closely, particularly with women, actually, it is great, but sometimes you think, where do I end and she begins? And you just sometimes just want something for yourself. And the comedy was really taking off. So early 90s. And I've been in a play with Frank Skinner in Birmingham. He wasn't called Frank Skinner then. He's called Chris Collins. And then Women in Theatre gone to Edinburgh with a sketch show, Susie knows what Edinburgh's like. It can be so hard. And, you know, about five people and the dog came. But we did go and see Frank Skinner. And I remember watching him and thinking, I think I can do what you're doing. He's a much better comedian than I did. But what I really thought was a sort of a green light for me was he was talking to the audience, and I knew that wouldn't put me off. I wasn't frightened of it. And I thought it was fun. And I love what the audience were giving him and he was running with. So I decided to have a go at doing it. And there was a club called The Retort, which was on the last night of last Sunday in the month in Ladywood in Birmingham. And it started late and it ended even later. So, you were there till 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night, you know, which was absolutely crazy and very risk-taking, but it somehow felt fantastic. And it was compared by Mackenzie Crook, who did a group called Charlie Cheese. And you could just get on stage. So people had written a song during the day with the mates, some, you know, over Sunday dinner. And then they just turn up and say, can we come and do this song? Can we come and do this poem? So I thought, I'm going to try to do a stand-up character. And I've been doing a health visitor character for a company that I was working with. It was very funny in the context of health visitor. So I went up and did it. And the absolute silence in the audience. And I knew they were thinking, she's very good, but I don't know anything about health visitors. I sort of went home. I thought, you've got to come up with something, Janice, that has got universal appeal. So I sat up all night and thought about, I'll do a mother, because then, I mean, I'm old now, but I thought I was old then to be doing stand-up. I must have been about late 30s or something. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But I have to come up with a mother figure. So I sort of came up with this idea of Barbara, who would mother the audience. And then I started doing co-comparing with a comedian called Reg Nice. So I was his mum, Barbara Nice, and he was my son, Reg Nice. And we did a mother and son compare act in Thorpe Street in Birmingham. And then I saw so many acts. It's a great way to see loads of acts if you compare, because you're there. My kids were little, so, you know, I couldn't travel or anything. But you saw all these acts that were coming from all over the country. And I saw brilliant acts and really learned how to do stand-up properly, really.
Mm.
And then I went in for a comedy competition and I did pretty well in that. And Peter Kay was in the audience because he'd won the same competition the year before. Then he said, do you want to be, I'm making a television program. And he was doing that Peter Kay thing. So I was in that. And then he asked me to be in Phoenix Nights. So that's when the telly stuff started.
I mean, Phoenix Nights is an absolute classic. It's so, so funny. And I can't quote many things, but I can often quote Phoenix Nights. What was it like filming that, Janice?
It was about an incredible privilege, and there were loads of other stand-ups in it, and we had a great time. And Peter was always very confident it would do well. We're filming BAFTA award winning material here, very, very confident. And it was great to do a second series as well and have another go at it. It's really hard television acting, and I think that, yeah, I'm still trying to get good at it. I think it's there's a knack to it. I think
you're more comfortable on the stage.
I know what I'm doing more.
Yeah.
With telly, you have to sort of know more about the camera angles and sort of really think it through. What's it going to look like at home? And I was used to be doing loads of acting off camera, you know, pointless acting. That was how people go, what are you doing? You know, nobody can see it.
It's hard to know when to stop.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And what about, because of course you've done Coronation Street and Doctors for a whole, is that a year now you've been playing? Well, you've done it before, haven't you? Yes, yeah.
And my character's going back in again, so that's really nice. And I've also just done Gus Kahn's Man Like Mabeen, and I don't know whether you've seen that, but it's absolutely brilliant. I think Gus Kahn is one of our great geniuses.
And it's a Birmingham comedy as well.
He's brilliant, and he gets lots of local young people in. It's very diverse. He's got a heart of gold. And I've just done a film with, talk about heart of gold and getting a good Birmingham person. I've just done a short film that Joe Lycett wrote and directed.
Is that Linda?
Yeah, and what he does with that, he raises the money through his artwork and then employs and pays. It's so important to pay young people, isn't it? People are just sort of beginning to get into the television and film industry as crew members, and gives them a really good experience, something to put on the CV, and pays them. So yeah, that was a great thing to do that. And I won a Best Actress award for that. So that was very nice. I'll be eternally grateful to the great Joe Lycett. I think he's beginning already to make another one next year. He intends to make one every year in the same way. He's just brilliant.
I love Joe Lycett. He's amazing. I saw his show last October and it was, which I won't go into because the punchline of it is brilliant, but he's just such a wonderful person. So tell us how you came to do Britain's Got Talent then.
Well, I don't think I'm breaking any sort of, what do you do when you sign the official?
Disclaimer. Or NDA, Official Secrets Act.
They ring you up. not ring everybody up, but they ring loads of people up every year.
Oh, do they?
There are lots of comedians.
They rang the Fizzogs up. The Fizzogs did it and they rang them up, yeah.
Wow. Of course, because I get loads of people now who've been rung up and they get in touch with me and go, what do you think? Shall I do it? And they rang me up for about 5 years. And eventually I said yes, because I was thinking to myself, what are you frightened of? You know, I think there is a bit of fear, the fear of being judged, of being made a fool of. And they assured me that, you know, they would be kind and it would be fine. And if it went really badly, they wouldn't show it and all that kind of stuff. And it went well and I enjoyed it. And they're very nice to you. And it was a lovely experience. It's just a massive show, you know, it's just huge. It's like being on a great big battleship, really. And everybody knows what they're doing. The backstage crew, wonderful, costume are brilliant, sounds terrific. You know, it's just a very slick ship. So, but you never get to see Simon and that lot. You don't get to see them backstage. With lots of lovely dancers and kids. And so the atmosphere backstage is brilliant. The atmosphere is probably what you think it's going to be like. But the process of getting there, I think some people do generally audition, but I think those days of those, you know, when people were being taken into a room, I don't think they're allowed to do that anymore because a lot of people are very vulnerable, weren't they, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, and I'm glad to say that I think we're more careful about people's mental health now and how we treat people with more respect. So it was a great experience, but it wasn't sort of quite the way it seems.
Mm. Were you nervous when you set foot on stage?
Not for the first audition, that was fine because it was at the Lowry actually, and I sort of played there quite a few times. And if you know a stage, you're less frightened of it, I think. When you go into a new place, it's a bit frightening. But doing the live show, I was a bit worried. Yeah, because it's sort of because it's live. But yeah, I was a bit more worried about that. Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because if it wasn't telly, it would have been. It probably wouldn't have been as frightening. It's that weird thing of like, oh, suddenly thinking there are millions of people watching this. You must have to try and push that to the back of your mind. I mean,
but it's all about how is it coming over on the camera.
Yeah.
I think it's that. I'd like to be more camera savvy than I am. I think it does get into my head, the camera a bit. Yeah.
Well, Joe Lycett will help. Just keep casting you in short films, please.
But I did feel very relaxed doing that. And I think I probably prefer film to telly somehow. I think film's a different ball game. It feels more gentle somehow.
Yeah. You get longer as well, don't you? Telly's far more rushed. It's quicker and hit the mark. It's a sort of more gentle process, I think, film to television. In fact, when I was doing my research about you, we actually worked on the same television show, The Locksmith, years ago. I was staff nurse Susan Wheeler. It was one of my first jobs.
Yeah, it was one of my first telly jobs.
Yeah, it was Warren Clark was the lead role and it was, I played when his wife got beaten up and taken into hospital. John Sim was in it as well. Yeah, but I dealt with his wife when she was beaten up.
Yeah. It was exciting to be in that. I remember thinking, God, this is brilliant.
Yeah. It was wonderful. Yeah, really, really fabulous. Yeah, fabulous. So what is your plan next? What do you want to do next now you've stepped away from Women in Theatre?
Well, I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing. I want to do a bit more painting, actually. So I've bought myself an easel. I used to love painting and things. I'm going to do that. I'm thinking of doing like a sort of final Barbara tour, perhaps in October, because I've been doing some gigs recently and people just love it. And I did one at Mac, my Christmas gig, and it was just great fun. So I'd do that in October. I'm going to be doing a bit of teaching. I like teaching comedy, so I've got a couple of those up. And there's a thing in Birmingham called the Digbeth Dining Club, where a smart bunch of good, they all seem to be boys, so good lads. And they've got a couple of really great venues. There's one called Hockley Social Club and one in Longbridge called Herbert's Yard. And I'm sort of doing mass bingo nights there. So I've just booked in about 20 of those for next year. So I'm going to be doing that, which is quite nice because I will have to travel a lot. So I'll be doing doctors in the new year and then just see what happens. I'd like to do a bit more acting. I've got a granddaughter now, so I'd like to spend a bit more time with her. really nice. But I don't want to, I'm not stopping. I'm passing over Women in Theatre because we've got NPO. And for those people that don't know what that is, it's National Portfolio Organisation money. So for the first time in 40 years, there's some guaranteed money for 3 years instead of sort of living hand to mouth and thinking, what are we going to do? Oh, you know, we've got to get another project in. So there's something definite to hand over. So it's really nice feeling to pass it on.
In a good place. That actually brings me to a question from a member of, well, one of our listeners, but also really it's Suad Farris from The Archers.
Okay. I love Suad because she was in one of our plays.
Well, she said, you know, she is fabulous. As in you. And I worked with Janice and both times were terrific. Please ask her how she manages to remain so creative in the face of funding uncertainties. She is a flipping dynamo. That's what she wrote.
Well, I suppose the funding uncertainties for us, I know that strangely for other companies who are used to having funding, it's more uncertain for them. But for Women in Theatre, for whom for 40 years, we had project funding from Arts Council, but mostly it was commission work from other sources like health authorities and stuff. For the first time, our funding is certain. So, but how do we keep going when it was uncertain? I think that really helps you be on it, because there's no money coming unless you make it. So you're always looking for the next big idea. And that kind of entrepreneurship suits me, really. I quite like that. Come on, let's get this sorted out. What are we going to do? You know, where are things going? Where's the zeitgeist? What needs talking about? What are people interested in? It saddens me a little bit when you're looking at the kind of theatre that's going on in main houses because of this uncertainty. They're sort of not taking many risks artistically. They're all things that people know about. I think I didn't go, but I know from lots of people it was a great show. But the Rep just had the Frank Sinatra story on. And they were in co-production with somebody in New York, which of course is brilliant. I don't think you can be a really proper, great play that's about how we're living now, that shines a light on the human experience and impacts on us, really.
Mm.
I always think about, what's that Thingy Miller play, Arthur Miller play, Death of a Salesman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When that came out, audiences were shocked because he was really talking about the American dream and saying, do we want to live like this? I think theatre and drama, I always think, don't waste it. Make sure it's about something. And not that I don't think having a good time is not, I do think having a good time is important, because the bad one was about lots of things, but was also great theatre. I think because something's about something, doesn't mean it's going to be boring or anything like that. So, yeah, I'm sad if the funding position has meant that bigger buildings have to play safe and have people been on the telly and all that. Because I think audiences are hungry for ideas and you know, challenging thoughts. And yeah, let's not dumb down theatre.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you just have to look at the whole body of work, you know, the body of work from women in theatre, and it's never boring and it's always challenging and interesting and, yeah, and speaks to everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
Even if it's about something quite specific, it's something everyone can appreciate. Yeah.
We did have a question from Lucy, actually, who said, what advice would you give to a young creative at the beginning of their career?
Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Always, I would say, just go out and do stuff, because you meet people, and you'll both know this, the people that you met when you were beginning are now in positions like you are to make a difference. You're more powerful. There's no wasted meeting. There's no wasted job, I think. So yeah, keep doing it. Don't get put off. Always be reliable as well. Turn up. I think one of the things, I was talking to my friend about this, I do think we have to, I know it's hard work being in plays and stuff, and we all know that, but you've got to, it's sort of, you do have to go over and above. You've got to get paid. I'm not into people working for nothing,
but you have to be prepared to put the graft in, really. And it is, you both know, it's really hard work. And it really annoys me when people think it's a soft doddly, oh, they're all lovers, you know. We work really properly hard. So to any young creative, be prepared to work hard and keep working and make your own work. I mean, that's what Winner Theatre did. They didn't wait really for somebody to come and give them some work. Make your own. And what's great about podcasts and social media and stuff like that and Zoom, TikTok, you can make your own stuff. You're not waiting anymore for somebody to say, yes, we'll have you. We can choose that.
Yeah, that's exactly why we're doing it, because we're just sort of, why are we just sitting here waiting for, who are we waiting for?
Who are we waiting
for? I was saying to Esther before we came on that I will never forget my first job with Women in Theatre, and I was so delighted to be working with you, and then I had to drive the van and I smacked it into the fence post, and I was more, do you remember, I was so upset, I was just crying because I was so mortified, and you, and I just remember you being like, oh, at least you care, at least you care, love. I'm like, don't worry. And I was at lunch trying to eat at my lunch, just going.
Oh, you did care rather than going, oh, I don't mess with the question.
I was mortified.
That's the kind of thing you're in plays writing and driving the van. Good times.
Oh, it was good. Think? That cafe, that Friends, the Friends Institute cafe, the food.
I know, wonderful.
I know, it was absolutely, I don't know how that was going. Food was cheaper in the early 2000s. Have you got any more questions?
I had Julie Sadler on Facebook said that she loves you and she's worked with you. And she was like, I just tell her I love her. There's just a lot of love for you, Janice, basically.
And my agent, Archie, he also loves you. And he sent me this picture from 2014. I think he'd gone to see you as Barbara. And that's my...
Say hello. Thank you very much.
He sends his love. And Ronnie Jutty, who plays Ardil in The Archer. There's an Archer's theme. I mean, I don't know where the link is there, but who'd think? But he said, have you been in The Archers, Janice? Have you been in it?
A long time ago, I was... I can't remember what I played. I have done it once.
I think it's about time you were back in it, to be honest. So we'll just put this out there.
Yes. Get nice and local.
And what kind of role do you think you'd like to play? I mean, could Barbara Nice just rock up in Ambridge potentially?
I don't know. It'd be good to bring some comedy because you're brilliantly funny in it, by the way. Do you love doing it? You're so brilliant.
I love it. I love it so much. Yeah. It's like my second home. I just love being in Ambridge. I love it.
So beautiful. Well, you're brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, comedy. Looking back, those are the things I like. You know, in Coronation Street, it's still great, but it's not as funny as it was. Let's add more comedy.
Mm.
So important.
Yeah.
Maybe Barbara could rock up. Who do we talk to, Susie? Go and talk
Yeah, don't worry. I'll put some Barbara Nice stickers around the place and keep mentioning. Jeremy, editor, are you looking for... you know, a very good comic kind of actress who can also do drama and tragedy, possibly with a northern twang. You know, I'll do that.
See what they make of it.
What's your plan for Christmas, Barbara? Barbara, I'm Barbara now, Janice. What are your plans for Christmas?
Well, we're going to have Christmas dinner here, and then go to Stockport for Boxing Day, and go to see the pantomime at the Plaza, which is one of those theatres that have been saved by the community. Thank God for the community saving all these venues. And so I'm really looking forward to that. Have a bit of time. I like that downtime, really, between Christmas and New Year, when nothing needs to be done. I quite like Christmas, but I do think it's a lot of pressure on people. I have a song that I sing as Barbara, which is, the female of the species does more at Christmas than the male. And it goes down very well with audiences. Shop, shop, rapping, rapping, shop, shop, rapping. A lot to do. And every year I kind of go, I'm not going to spend a lot of money. And then I always do. I always buy too much stuff. I sort of try, I buy something for somebody and then I see something better and I think, oh, that's better, I'm going to buy that.
I know. It's...
I find it stressful. I don't know. How are you two? Esther, how are you with Christmas?
At home, but I fall into the same trap. And actually, my husband's brilliant. He cooks Christmas dinner, but I do all of the presents. There's like 19 or 22. I was counting it the other day. There's a lot of people I have to buy presents for and do all the cards, all the presents and everything and clean the house, although he does get a bit involved with that. And I'm not taking away, he does do, you know, he cooks the meal, which is great. But everybody always goes, isn't he marvellous? He's done it all. And I feel this slight resentment because I think I've done everything else. Every present under the tree. He doesn't know what any of them are.
That's right.
If you do the cooking, you're the best somehow.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's that about?
I don't know, but that always happens in our house as well. Yeah. And you're at home, are you, Suze?
I'm at home, but I've really tried this year to not get into a panic about Christmas because I love Christmas. I love it, and since I've had a family, it's become. I now go, oh, that's why my mum used to say, I hate Christmas.
That's right.
She was up till 3 a.m. wrapping presents. Why? Yeah.
And it actually hurts your shoulders, doesn't it? I was doing something, I can't remember, getting some lights up. And I was thinking, this is really hurting me. It's painful. Yes.
Metaphorically and literally.
It shouldn't be like that.
Thank you so much. We better let you go. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been such a treat to talk to you.
It's been a joy, and happy Christmas both, and happy Christmas everybody listening, and I hope you have a peaceful time.
Aww.
And find some joy. We're doing a little I work with a part of Women in Theatre stuff. We're doing a group of older people. It's called the Community Performance Club, and it's in Druids Heath in Birmingham, and we're doing a little Christmas cabaret based around Christmas Carol. And at the end, the woman that's comparing says if we take anything away from Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, it is that it's not the presents that count. It is the presence.
Yeah.
The presence of loved ones. And that is really what it's about. It's about people. But you have to really hang on to that, don't you? And everything's bombarding and you think, I've got to get everything perfect. Yeah. And
it's just about being with people.
It's not straight. It is. It's very simple, really.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really simple. It's about being with people that you love.
Yeah.
And sometimes and Sherry.
Stress gets in the way. And Sherry. Bailey's.
There we go. Right on cue, I bring in a bottle of Bailey's. It's actually empty, but that says a lot.
She's drunk it.
It's actually...
Right on cue.
Who wants £1 million?
A lot of
Thank you, Janice. It's been so lovely to talk
to
you.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Limited Time Only Christmas Special.
Thank you so much to our fabulous Christmas guest, the wonderful Janice Connolly.
Thank you so much to our patrons for supporting the podcast on Patreon. Special shout out to our two most recent additions, Hayley and Sally. Thank you so much, gals. It really means a lot to have your support.
And thank you also to you for listening. We wish you a very Merry Christmas.
From Esther and myself at Limited Time Only, a pick-me-up in podcast form. Right, Esther, I'm going back into the tin of Quality Street. Send help.
Help? I'm coming with you. Bags of the strawberry creams.
Oh, you can have them.